Ray Bauer versus Holder.
Yes.
I might have misunderstood literally back then. I want to make sure, Judge. Good morning.
Mr. Bell.
Hi there. Good morning, honored judges, opposing counsel. May it please the court. Rarely do you have the, I suggest, rarely is there a moment in the circuit courts of this land where you can decide a due process issue for which there is no reported precedent. I believe that moment presents itself now in the case of Krista Fareed Bauer. You are aware. First, by the way, Judge, I am Alan Bell. I'm the attorney for Krista Fareed Bauer. And in a moment, I'll briefly detail the elements of her case. But you are aware that based on the briefs before you and the new information I will provide shortly, that the issue of law, it's a very unusual one, is where there is clearly ineffective assistance of counsel that is provided by a regulation-permitted legal assistant, now in the law called an accredited representative. If that person goofs up, provides ineffective counsel, and there's no regulation and no case law and no remedy for this, has the petitioner here been denied due process? Now, the BIA and opposing and the government could fix the issue because in all the pleadings before you, basically, in terms of the BIA, they confused this legal assistant with being a lawyer. And you're undoubtedly well aware of the Lozada case that calls for, in an immigration context, a bar complaint where ineffective assistance of counsel is provided. There is no mechanism, however, to make such a complaint where the ineffective assistance is provided by a legal assistant, a volunteer legal assistant at that, that is now known as an accredited representative. There is a particular exhibit I want to call to your attention. It's Exhibit 7C, excuse me, please, at page 53 of petitioner's separate appendix. And to make a long story short, this involves Ms. Fareed Bauer's request by her volunteer assistant, Ms. Omazic, to the USCIS, the Department of Homeland Security, informing that agency that she was the representative for Ms. Fareed Bauer, and furnish paperwork.
Counsel, you're not addressing the two threshold issues. One is the question whether we have any jurisdiction given the decision in Kushana. And the second question is whether the board was entitled to deny the application as untimely, because that was the ground on which the board acted. It seems to me you need to address those two subjects.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. And in the very recent case of Joseph V. Holder, which two of the three members of this panel participated in, the decision of August 27, 2009, this court granted the petition to, that is, the motion to reopen, in very similar circumstances. There was jurisdiction found because, in a nutshell, the petitioner here had raised a constitutional issue, claiming that her constitutional rights to due process had been infringed. I know, Judge Easterbrook, that you are well aware of the Kuchana case and the Lugazamo case and so on. The Kuchana case, where this court, you write in the opinion, decided there was no jurisdiction.
I don't understand. I did not understand your brief to be arguing that enforcing the time limits could violate the Constitution. That's why I say that ground on which you lost before the agency was that this motion was untimely. And one needs to show, if you were trying to take advantage of the Real ID Act's exception for constitutional theories, you need to show that enforcing the time limits could violate the Constitution. But I didn't understand your brief to be making such an argument. That's why it seems to me there's a jurisdictional problem here.
The time limit is extended, I suggest, where there are exceptional circumstances shown or the limit to be extended. Now, in a nutshell, Ms. Bauer was denied.
Am I correctly understanding your brief? Does your brief contend that enforcing the time limits violates the Due Process Clause? Where can I find that argument in your brief?
It does not, Judge. But
well,
but
if
in
your
a
brief doesn't make
in
that
another,
argument,
in another context,
counsel,
yes,
you can't make constitutional arguments on your feet for the first time in the Court of Appeals. You have to make them in your papers.
I'll return in a few minutes. For the, excuse me, please. I'll resume in a few minutes after, and I'll see you for a vote. Thank you very much.
Are you not going to
answer your question?
Deal with the second part of my question? I said there were two issues you had to address. One was jurisdiction, and the second was whether the board was entitled to enforce the time limit. Why is the board, putting all constitutional issues aside, why is the board not entitled to enforce its time limit? The fact that there may have been a reason for not attending the hearing, it seems to me, is not a reason for failing to file the motion to reopen within the specified time.
The motion could not have been filed in the specified time because the petitioner was unaware that of her ability to file such a motion because of the ineffective assistance of counsel by the legal assistant. That is Ms. Omazic. She gave an affidavit explicitly explaining that the only reason she filed later is because Ms. Omazic's actions, as described in her affidavit, Exhibit E, basically, let me say it another way, Judge. In Exhibits G, H, and I, this is a heartbreaker of a case. Ms. Bauer is married to a naval officer and has been now for 5 years, who filed a petition for her for adjustment to be a permanent resident. Based on that petition, exhibits, for example, exhibits G, several other exhibits in the separate appendix show that she was fingerprinted. She went to the Immigration Service. She had no idea that she had missed a court date. Exhibit C of petitioner's separate appendix stands for the principal judge that Ms. Bauer missed a court date November 27, 2005, because she relied upon the legal assistant. The second paragraph of the letter of Exhibit C, the assistant states to the USCIS to please withdraw Ms. Bauer's application for asylum. That was the sole basis for the hearing of November 25, 2007, and on that basis, and Ms. Bauer had been informed of the letter, she simply didn't attend the hearing, and she blew it, but she didn't know she had blown it.
Yes, the You're just not addressing my question. Question was not why she didn't attend the hearing, but why she didn't file a motion to reopen within 180 days after receiving the removal order.
The removal order, Judge, to the best of my knowledge, the actual written order
Counsel, thank you very much.
Let me explore the my briefs, and I'll be back for the
rebuttal. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Ms. Iverson. Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Julie Iverson, and I represent the United States Attorney General.
Ms. Iverson, before you even begin, I need to explore something with you.
Yes, Your Honor.
And maybe you can help me out.
I'll try, Your Honor.
How can the IJ deny an asylum claim that a petitioner has already withdrawn? In other words, as I understand it, at the time of the asylum hearing on November 28, wasn't there nothing for the IJ to rule on because she withdrew her application for asylum by that letter that was sent on November 9? And if she had withdrawn her claim successfully, then wouldn't that mean that there was no basis to close her application for adjustment of status based on her marriage? Did you see my problem?
Your Honor, Ms. Bauer would still have overstayed her visa, so she still would have a ground for being found removable. And also, the letter to which you refer, in which the legal representative tried to withdraw the application, was sent to USCIS. But by that time, Ms. Bauer was already in removal proceedings, which is with EOIR and not with USCIS. So it's unclear whether that would have withdrawn the application. But even if there was a pending asylum application, Ms. Bauer still had overstayed her visa.
In other words, are you saying that there would not be a due process problem to deny a withdrawn claim and then use that denial to close the application to adjust status?
Your Honor, it wasn't. It was not the denial or the referral. The asylum application was not denied by USCIS. It would have been referred. And so then it would have gone before EOIR. USCIS, when evaluating the adjustment of application, the adjustment of status application, was basically looking at the fact that she had already been placed into removal proceedings. So it didn't really go to the merits of the asylum claim. Is that responsive, Your Honor?
I've had some trouble with the with the briefs in this case. So why don't you go on with your argument? I may be the only member of the panel that's having a problem with this.
Okay, Your Honor. To address Judge Easterbrook's concerns, this court lacks jurisdiction to review the board's discretionary denial of a motion to reopen based on ineffective assistance of counsel under Kukana and its progeny. Kukana was extended in Huang, in which this court applied the jurisdictional bar over the discretionary denial of motions to reopen in the context of an untimely motion to reopen, even one based on allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel. So so basically any assertion that so basically because this is an untimely motion to reopen, it's foreclosed by this court's decision in Huang. Additionally, this court extended Kukana to discretionary decisions to deny motions to reopen based on ineffective assistance of counsel in Jezierski. And because there's no due process-based or constitutional right of an alien to effective assistance of counsel under Magala, this court's decision in Magala, the board's ineffective assistance of counsel claim is basically considered by the board in the exercise of its discretion. And so I have not heard anything, any constitutional or legal question which would overcome the jurisdictional bar in this case. As this court knows, Kukan is currently pending before the Supreme Court. An oral argument was heard last week. And so alternatively, if this court would like to decide the case on its merits, the board did not abuse its considerable discretion in denying the motion to reopen where Ms. Bauer failed to comply with the matter of Lozada requirements. In fact, she failed to comply with any of the three discretionary Lozada requirements. Additionally, when Ms. Bauer filed her motion to reopen with the immigration judge, she attributed her failure to appear to advice she had received from various acquaintances who told her that if she married for love and filed an adjustments application, that would cancel her need to appear at her hearing. At no time in her affidavit or in the motion to reopen did she assert that her legal representative, Ms. Azamak, had given her any erroneous legal advice. She did not, she did not give her legal representative the opportunity to respond to any subsequent allegations she did make, nor did she file any sort of complaint with any disciplinary authority. Your Honors, if there are no questions, I'd like to sum up. Basically, under this court's precedent in Kukana, the court lacks jurisdiction to consider this case, even though it's based on ineffective assistance of counsel. And alternatively, the board did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion to reopen where Ms. Bauer failed to comply with any of the three Lozada requirements. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.